conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is The Horn, the Head On Radio Network, America's liberal voice, a little something we call conversation radio. I'm Bob Kincaid. You all know that, but I like to go through all that just in case, because there are new listeners all the time, and let's get the contact info out there right away. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And, you can reach the show either toll-free or direct dial, depending on whether or not you need us to carry the freight. If you want to direct dial it, it's 304-658-3333. And the toll-free number is 877-443-2366. Here in a little bit, we'll get to the phone lines. We'll start out the evening, however, with a trip to the email bag. A lot of positive responses on last night's show, and I really appreciate that. One of the things that hasn't happened up till now is that very few people, in the for-profit media, we've known what a snake, what a miserable POS he was all along. But very few people in the for-profit mainstream 1% media have bothered to really shine any sort of a light on the evils, and I do mean evils, of Bro-Fromix Rick Santorum. But by God, we did last night, and I was heartened that you found that valuable. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we've got several thorns. But like I said, a trip to the mailbag first. Longtime friend and supporter of the program, Tom from California, with an email. He said, "I'm very relieved that the fundraising went okay in December without my participation. It was a difficult month here, and I'm grateful for everyone's help. Hopefully, I can get back to it this month. I was absolutely amazed when David talked about Cave of Forgotten Dreams," David from Maine, "because I'm usually way, way, way behind in the pop culture department, but I saw it back in July in a local theater, in 3D, wouldn't that have been cool, which was, as Tom notes, stunning. First and probably the last time I ever beat David to something. But this caveat," Tom offers, "but I just can't handle his promotion to Minister of Culture. Every time I hear that, what pops into my head? Mini-cult, of course. Way too Orwellian. Pop culture correspondent is much more respectable." So I take that to heart, and I don't think... Yeah, Minister. Yeah, that's... You're probably right, Tom. Tom continues, "I turned on the radio this morning to drive to work, my usual station, the late Green 960, and what did I hear but Glenn Beck? No more Hartman in the morning here. And you know what? There's an entire discussion, dialogue, whatever, in that sentence alone. If that doesn't prove the absolute urgent need for... Because they still don't get it. And maybe that's what we'll be saying 10 years from now. The limousine liberals, the people with the Jed Clampett walking around cash, who have the wherewithal to go out and buy radio stations and build up a network of progressive talk across this country, ain't doing it. Mainly because, well, a number of reasons. You know, when something is tried on a grand scale and fails, it poisons the well for a lot of the rest of us. And the dramatic way in which Air America went down the toilet has made a lot of people gun-shy of the idea of doing progressive talk on the radio, or rather, not doing it. There's plenty of people willing to do it, but not so many willing to fund it. And that's the topic for further discussion. But anyway, Tom continues, so that brings me to my question. And the question, he says, what's the best Android app to listen to the horn? Zia, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio? This smartphone stuff is all new to me. Just got one and switched the family to Credo Mobile. If you or another listener can clue me in, I'd appreciate it. Thanks for all you do, Tom. And thank you, Tom, for all you do and have done. As far as the best Android app, there seems to be a consensus that all three of those you mentioned, Zia, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio, are all good. I use TuneIn Radio on the Android devices that we have, just because it seems easiest to negotiate. But of course, the floor is open for discussion if anyone else wants to opine upon the topic. So again, Tom would like to know which Android app you use to bring in the horn on your smartphone. Oh, see? Texas Betsy, she catches me. Noting the limousine liberals and the death grip they have on their cash, she says, they were gun-shy before and during America. And I thought you weren't using the word gun. Well, I try to use... that's true. I didn't think of gun... I think of gun-shy being not a bad thing, but a good thing. But... oh, dear. I've been caught. Yes. I am. I do. I try to get the eliminationist imagery out of my vocabulary. I try not to talk about being in fights, but rather struggles. So... Thanks for the little nudge, Betsy. I appreciate that. Marty noting, yeah, the former Green 60, the liberal side, is time delayed to the later evening hours. Right, to make sure that the liberals can't participate in the discussion, yet some yahoo from Busted Knuckle, Oklahoma can call Glenn back. Glenn, I agree with you. Me and Marveline agree with you 100%. You're a good American. Thank you. That's enough about you. Now let's talk about me. Because there's plenty of room and time for wingnuts to call radio stations. Just, it's a little, well, why would a liberal city like San Francisco want to hear its liberal citizens offering opinion? Or any liberals anywhere else for that matter, right? Sure. Yeah, you know, all pigs are equal. It's just that some pigs are more equal than other pigs. See the aforementioned Orwell, Animal Farm, Snowball, right. And other emails coming in. This from Paul in Portland. He says, I wanted to get out the idea of getting Bob back into the black. Titled the email is Back in Black 2012. I want to rally all the listeners to come together and make sure that no month ends in the red. And if a month does end in the red, we make it up next month. I know it's hard to contribute for a lot of us, but every little bit helps. I have a tradition of every other new year or so of rolling all the change I have in the jar o' change I have next to my bed. Traditionally, I would go and get something nice for my girlfriend, flowers, concert tickets, etc. Well, I've been single for a long while now, says Paul, and just rolled the change I had because the jar was getting full. While I was rolling it, I was contemplating what I should do with it. And then it just hit me. The horn! It came out to $28, and I kicked in $2 to make it an even 30. Thank you, Paul. Thank you very, very much. Listeners, come together and search the couch cushions for loose change. Surely if we all come together, we can fund a 10-cent-an-hour internet radio program with our loose change. Good luck in 2012, Bob. Hope Agnes and Ferg are doing okay after the wreck. Signed, Paul from Portland. Paul, that's mighty nice. And it is, well, it's part, it, you know, the, you know the drill. I don't have to give the speech. 32, huh? You told it wrong. If we sit around waiting for the aforementioned limousine liberals to foster the dialogue in this country, well, we can just duct tape our mouths shut and have done with it. Right? Now, Isaac tells me, he says, this is what I made to listen to your show, Bob. Works on all platforms that I know of so far. And he has sent me along an M3U file that I can't really... Tell me a little bit more about it, Isaac, please. Because, well, we're in the middle of the show and it's kind of hard to go running through it. But, okay, cool. Thank you. And you made that? Whoa. Regarding some conversation previously on the program, this in from our buddy Tosh. He says, I must disagree with you and Sandra on the New Deal. I'm in the belly of the beast, and some of these people have hated the New Deal from its inception onward. From its inception onward. For example, one old gentleman from Oklahoma and then Ohio was a rabid anti-FDR, FDRer, it's kind of hard to say, FDRer, a rabid anti-FDRer from the 1930s until his death in the 1990s. His daughter shares that opinion and is a regular Rush listener. Her daughter is a bit more nuanced, but disparages anyone liberal or progressive. Imagine what political conversation are like around here. Really short. And Tosh notes, even my youngest hopes to return to the Wall Street Journal editorial pages writing anti-union stuff. Ah! That's Tosh, not me. They were there the whole time, these anti-FDRers. They just were not out in numbers. This thread of the family is evangelical all the way back. It wasn't until recently that my father-in-law, who will not only admit to not voting for president in 1964, stated that having seen him in action, live and in person, don't ask, he would have voted for RFK had he had the chance. New Deal programs did give money to people of color as well as whites, even in the 1930s. Now, it wasn't at a one-to-one rate, but it was a lot better than the 100-to-1 that might have satisfied the Southern Democrats. In fact, on some WPA projects, especially in the New York area, the leaders themselves were persons of color. It may be that it became objectionable to these anti-FDR, anti-New Deal types when the pay rates reached something approaching equity. Or was it when their politicians made welfare an issue and said it was only black people who got it, despite the reality that more whites have always gotten these benefits, that they tied this aid to their racism and came out against it? By the way, this is a program that I'm pretty sure Jesus Christ would have been completely happy with. Oh, it would have been, yes, he would have marveled at it. Feed my sheep! You know, that was not a specific statement aimed at any particular group. Feed my sheep. Tosh noting, at the time, knowing where my family was living, I probably would have been a Republican. We lived in GOP strongholds of Vermont and Montana in the 1930s. My paternal grandfather made a good living selling trout flies in the 1930s after he had to quit barbering in 1933, so it's likely he was a Roosevelt Republican. You know, Teddy. Thanks, Tosh. A lot of input on a lot of different topics. I asked a question last night for the international contingent, and Robert Phase 5 from the chat room has kindly contributed to that discussion. I asked, if you hear all this, and we were talking in particular about the Rick Santorum truly bizarre statement, in which he equated Mussolini's Italian fascism with Medicare, Medicaid, food stamps, Social Security, you know, the social safety net. And Robert writes, listening to yesterday's show by podcast last night, I still, for the life of me, because the question I had put is, with regard to that quote, where fascism is the same thing as not letting someone starve to death or die of medical neglect, that that equals fascism. Does the rest of the world see this and just, God, see, if it was me, I'd be pissed, as in angry. So Robert says, I still, for the life of me, cannot understand the attitude many Americans appear to have toward universal single-payer health care, socialized medicine, as they say. The Brits got it in 1948. We got it here in Australia in 1975. Is it perfect? No, it's not. It needs work. Ours needs to cover dental and optical, as does the NHS in Great Britain. Is it free? No, it's not. There's a 1% levy on your income tax to pay for it. Or, since John Howard decided to give Australian taxpayer dollars to prop up the private health care industry, a 1.5% levy if you don't have private health insurance. That's worth going into at some point. What a little for-profit subsidy that is. Robert continues, is everyone covered? Yes. Everyone is covered. Everyone can see a GP when they're sick and go to hospital if needed. You cannot be refused medical assistance, and you won't be sent home from hospital until you are well enough to do so. But being socialized medicine, the medical attention you receive must be second rate, correct? Says Robert, no. The medical attention you receive is the best available anywhere in the world and as good as any in any private hospital. Yes, we still have private hospitals in Australia, if you have the money to pay for them. Why, he asks, would anyone be against such a system? Everyone's covered. It doesn't cost you an arm and a leg to pay for it. You cannot be refused medical attention. And it's the best in Australia. As a postscript, Robert adds, there's not a single politician in Australia who would dare pull that God talks to me crap in public, especially in an election campaign, although John Howard did speak at the Hillsong megachurch one election. Even the single politician here in New South Wales who stands on a religious ticket, the Festival of Light, barely breathes a word along that line. It must be refreshing. I can't help thinking that it is. It must be refreshing to be able to contemplate one's politics without having all the hoopla, claptrap, and mummery of religion entering into the discussion. Sandra responding to Robert saying, the answer, in the U.S., too many black and brown people. And it's the truth. If America, I guess there's no way to prove it, but if America was a lily-white country, or didn't have those annoying constitutional thingies out there that provided equal protection and equal access and all those annoying things that Republicans hate, we'd probably have single-payer health care. Do you doubt it? Because I don't. Just as every anti-abortion argument cannot proceed without religion as its starting place, any discussion of the social safety net cannot proceed without acknowledging the very building blocks of this country, which is racism and bigotry, prejudice and hate. For the love of God, you know, we talk about the foundations of this. The foundation of the White House and of the Capitol were laid by enslaved people. Racism and bigotry, prejudice and hate are the essential building blocks of vast, vast portions of what passes for American culture. Marty also noting, to Robert, I've heard Dr. Heldon Caldicott ask the same question he just did about the U.S. and frequently. And I think the answer has to be that it's race. It's race. Because this country never has come to terms with issues surrounding race. And it's hard, if not impossible, to deny the fact that in many ways, in many places, the Civil War is still being fought. No? Right? And we've got manifestations of that in the stack this evening. You know, a couple of nights ago, we played the clip of Rick Santorum saying that he didn't want to improve black people's lives by giving them other people's money. Now all that's changed. And, of course, who gave him the opportunity to walk that obvious statement back? I mean, for-profit 1% media. Sure.
And you told an audience there that you don't want to, quote, make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. Mark Morial said this, Senator Santorum is perpetuating a thoroughly false and destructive racial stereotype in a desperate attempt to score political points. He is appealing to the lowest common denominator within the electorate and, quite frankly, should be ashamed of yourself. How would you respond to that, Senator?
I would respond a couple of ways. First off, Mark Morial and I have worked together on a number of issues, and he knows quite well how much work I've done in the African-American community. I've worked with him at the Urban League. I've worked with him when he was mayor of New Orleans. The other thing is I've looked at that quote. In fact, I looked at the video. And I'm pretty confident I didn't say black. When I think I started to say a word and sort of mumbled it and changed my thought. But I don't recall saying black. No one in that audience, no one listening, no reporter there, heard me say that. I think it was, and from everything I see, and I've looked at it several times, I was starting to say one word, and I sort of came up with a different word and moved on, and it sounded like black. But I can assure you, if you look at my record, there's no one that's worked more when I was a senator from Pennsylvania in the urban communities, both black, Hispanics, as well as whites.
You buying that? I'm not buying that. Now he says it, he's looked at it and he doesn't think he said it. Well, this should be easy enough.
My line is, I don't want to make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money. I want to.
There it is. But this is America, and what? I guess we rewrite reality to suit sorry right-wing bigots. If you didn't say black people, what other words begin with bleh? Because that's what he says he said. He said bleh. I don't want to make bleh people. Bleh. Bleh people. Blue people? Bleh. Bland people? Bleh. Blithe people? Because that's definitely an adjective. I've been a user and reader of the English language for some, 45, 46 years now. And that's an adjective. Any time that I don't want to make blue. Blue? Blue. Blue. Anybody? I mean, tell me what. If he wasn't saying black people, what was he saying?
To make black people's lives better by giving them somebody else's money.
No, okay. You want the honest answer? He was saying black. I'm looking at the crowd, that pasty-faced, doughy crowd to whom he was speaking, and there was not a person of color in there. And so he thought he was on safe ground. This is Freudian stuff. Because remember, it gets a big applause.
And provide for themselves and their families. And the best way to do that is to get the manufacturer...
Yeah, I don't want to make black people's lives better. Right! Clap, 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 clap. He caught... And maybe the truth of the matter is he caught himself. But he caught himself about to say, I don't want to make black people's lives better. But he just couldn't hit the brakes quite quickly enough. But this guy's a liar. So necessarily, or it follows, that he'll just... Oh, I didn't say that. Just make it up as you go along. I didn't say that. And then, when asked to explain it, remember, he said that he said it because he'd just been watching Waiting for Superman, which is a movie, he said, about black children. Now, he didn't say blue children, bland children, blithe children, blue children, blob children, blinky children. I'm running out of BL words here. I wish I had the rest of the clip. Because if I did, maybe we'd find out how intrepid journalist John King handled that. Or did he just give him a big old journalistic smooch and let him get off the hook? Jay and Yuma writing in. Bob, there is a very distinct difference in the gene pool in Australia and the USA. The people who first displaced the natives here were themselves religious nutcases. The first Europeans reaching Australia were common criminals as defined by the English royalty. You know, poor folks with debt and stuff. Yeah, it's criminal debt. And there may very well be a great deal of truth in that. Thank you. Thank you, Jay. David in Tennessee noting, Repiglicans only want the government to give to those like themselves, rich people. Giving anything to someone of a lesser station, but the very same citizenship. Why, Bob, that's throwing away money to the undeserving. Exactly. Ah, here's a possibility coming from Bill in Cleveland. Maybe Rick Santorum was saying he didn't want to make Bobby Blue Bland's life better. You guys. But this is a common thread and a common theme, because now Newt Gingrich has picked up on it. Dr. Newt. Newt and Leroy Gingrich, get your big old head all over here. Because this plays to the hatred that lies at the very core of conservatism. So here's, lo and behold, it played in Iowa, so to speak. So necessarily, Newt and Leroy Gingrich is in New Hampshire. Another place with not a lot of folks of color and a lot of cranky white people who apparently elect people to office who want all laws to have to refer to the Magna Carta. Magnet. What? Is that a department store? No, lo and behold, there was Dr. Newt in New Hampshire today. And I guess this is one of those only Nixon can go to China moments, because Dr. Newt, amateur paleontologist, oh, Jesus, that story, asked why he didn't believe in global warming. Newton Leroy Gingrich Dunn said it was because he was an amateur paleontologist. Whoo! Well, the amateur paleontologist is apparently also an amateur sociologist. Emphasis on the word amateur. But he vowed he's going to go and attend him an NAACP meeting. Yes, indeed. Newton Leroy Gingrich is going to go and tell the NAACP what's what.
More people are in food stamps today because of Obama's policies than ever in history. I would like to be the best paycheck president in American history. Now, there's no neighborhood I know of in America where if you went around and asked people, would you rather your children had food stamps or paychecks, you wouldn't end up with a majority saying they'd rather have a paycheck. And so I'm prepared, if the NAACP invites me, I'll go to their convention and talk about why the African-American community should demand paychecks and not be satisfied with food stamps. And I'll go to them and explain a brand new Social Security opportunity for young people, which would be particularly good for African-American males, because they're the group that gets the smallest return on Social Security, because they have the shortest lifespan.
So there you have it. If you want to talk about food stamps or you want to talk about Social Security, well, you got to talk to the black community, because obviously the black community are the only people who are, you know, using it. Have you ever met, and I think you have, Newton Leroy Gingrich? Have you ever met, and I think you have, your average Klansman? Because your average Klansman wasn't eligible for membership in the White Citizens Council, or the Concerned Citizens Council, or whatever the hell it was. Your average Klansman was dirt poor, and because he couldn't eat food, he was fed instead a steady diet of racism and bigotry. But guess what? They get to draw food stamps too. Maybe Newton Leroy Gingrich, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist, maybe he needs to go to a Klan rally. Or maybe he needs to go to a Walmart shareholders meeting. Not saying that the Klan and Walmart are the same. No. But because Walmart actually gave and probably still gives seminars to its workers, the majority of whom are white, on how to go and collect social safety net benefits in addition to their paltry paychecks. And this, of course, brings up a secondary or perhaps primary issue, and that is that business about would you rather have food stamps or a paycheck. There are a lot of people in this country drawing a paycheck who also qualify for food stamps. The food stamp threshold was made a little bit more humane since the arrival of President Obama. Maybe it's a few cents more per day per person than the miserly not quite $3 a day it was under George W. Pinhead. Contrary, and it's just how they frame things. It's how the right-wing mind works. Contrary to more people being on food stamps being necessarily a bad thing, It is actually a manifestation of, what did Lincoln call them, the better angels of our nature, that we are trying to feed more people in an economy gone to crap, that went thereunto as a result of what? Oh, wait, look, 8 years of George Bush. Barack Obama did not crash the economy. Neither did Fannie or Freddie or Acorn or people getting loans they don't deserve. And we also know that that's more of that dog whistling code from the pasty faced, doughy, bigoted, prejudiced, racist white people whistle back and forth to each other. Urban, you heard Rick Santorum talking about urban. I've worked with urban issues and urban people, because urban is a convenient way for uncomfortable white people to reference the persons of color who make them so uncomfortable in the first place, without actually acknowledging it on its face. Right? Sure. Newton Leroy Gingrich. Going to go to an NAACP meeting, and he's going to tell them why they ought not be eating so much food. Because that's what he said, why they should. Those paychecks he was talking. Not all paychecks are created equal. Not all paychecks are written hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time like they are to Newton Leroy Gingrich. I'm sorry, Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist. There are vast swaths of America of all racial tones and pigments for whom paychecks cannot make it from payday to payday, and not because of the profligate living of those undeserving poor people. Look at them. Would you just look at them over there? Well, I think I saw one just pick up a steak and look at it before they put it back in the meat case. When we all know they ain't got business looking at anything short, anything other than maybe a marked down nearly rotten hamburger, right? And that's only for once a week, and the rest of the time it's rice and beans. Right? Jeebus. But this is the sweet spot. This is the wheelhouse of the repig-licking right. This is the stuff that gets Republican ladies and Republican men all tingly and excited about taking America back, because taking America back actually means taking America back. You've got to take it back from someone, and that is the thing that they have promulgated, this idea that America has been taken away by the by the Mexicans and the black people and the liberals, and God is not going to be. And all of this in turn stems from a deep recognition that they probably couldn't even acknowledge, these conservatives, that they're on the way out. You cannot compel the tide not to come in, nor can you change the fact, no matter how many Mrs. Duggar quiver people, baby makers there are, you can't compel the demographics that will absolutely redefine the population makeup of this country not to be what they are. And in 10 or so short years, it's going to become obvious. David in Tennessee noting, taking America back means having it all for themselves. Seems obvious to me, says David. Yes. They don't want to share any America. If they read Langston Hughes's Let America Be America Again, they stop at the title and start thinking about how nice it was back when everyone knew their places. And they never get to that second line, for it never was America for me. It goes on and on and on. And I guess we have to at least a little give a little bit of applause or acknowledgement, not applause, to Rick Santorum for tapping into every last ugly base manifestation of what it means to be conservative. Of all the creepy crawly fears that inhabit their little spider-laden brains. Whether it's marriage equality or contraception, you name it. He has found, Santorum has, a way to tap in to the most vile impulses of bigotry in this country. And it's frightening. It is frightening.
How about the ideas that all men are created equal and, like, the rights to happiness and liberty?
Okay, so are we saying that everyone should have the right to marry?
Yes.
Everyone.
Yes.
Okay, so anyone can marry anybody else. Okay? So anybody can marry anybody else. So anybody can marry several people. Well, wait a minute. Whoa. Stop. No, this is not participatory. We're not gonna do this. Okay? I'm gonna ask a question. If people want to respond, I'll be happy to call them. So I'm just positing some things you need to think about. So if...
Right, because he's smarter than these people at New England College. Did you hear that? This is not participatory. How classically Republican that is. We will not have dialogue and discussion on this. By God, I'm an authoritarian. Remember, I'd like to have the powers of a medieval pope.
Everybody has a right to be happy, so if you're not happy unless you're married to five other people, is that okay? I'm asking her. Is that okay?
I'm
asking the question. If what you said was...
Yeah, you're asking the question because the question was asked of you, and you can't give an answer. Oh, dear. No, you know why polygamy has come up, right? The ability to marry five or six people. He's not an idiot. He's hateful. He's vile. He's poisonous. But he's not an idiot. And he knows that the guy he's got to worry about is a Mormon whose grandfather was a polygamist and who re-entered the United States as an illegal alien, the term they like to use. I can't imagine any human being illegal, but that's where that's coming from. It's no longer the man on dog reference because Dan Savage has already said that if he pulls that crap out some more, he'll Google bomb his first name too. And so there will be something in front of frothy mixture. No. Man on dog, not so much, but how about four or five wives? Like Mitt Romney's granddaddy had. Does he even know who his granny was? See, there's really base pernicious stuff at work here. Because once you get to, does he know who his grandma or granddaddy was? You know, for sure. Then we're talking about issues of bastardy, and we really, well, he's in New Hampshire, so we're right back there in the Magna Carta. Because bastardy was a disqualifier for inheritance at one point in time of property and of rights.
Buddy, everybody has a right to be happy, so if you're not happy unless you're married to five other people, is that okay?
Not
for real. I'm asking her. Is that okay?
I'm not asking that.
Well, no, I'm asking the question. If what you said was every person has a right to their own happiness, so, no, it's not irrelevant. No one's being...
Right for two men to have the same rights as a man and a woman.
Well, what about three men? No, stop.
He can't answer the question. Can two men have the same rights as a man and a woman? Well, what about three men? Because I think even Rick Santorum knows that the great weight of American opinion is contrary to him.
Okay, I'm going to give people one more chance and then we're going to move on. So I'm going to ask you a question again. If it makes three people happy to get married, based on what you just said, what makes that wrong and what you said right?
How do you justify your belief based on these high morals you have about all men being created equal when two men who want to marry...
Well, what about three men?
That's not what I'm talking about.
Well, I know...
Giving them the basic rights that you give you and another woman.
You know, it's important if we're going to have a discussion based on rational, reasoned thought that we employ reason, okay? And reason says that if you think it's okay for two, then you have to differentiate with me as to why it's not okay for three, right?
No! 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 Reason says that if it's okay for one set, why is it not okay for another? Why is sauce for the gander not sauce for the goose? He's cheating. He is not arguing from a position of reason. That's changing the rules. That's a Monty Python skit.
Another reminder coming from Robert. Oh, by the way, election campaigns in Australia are only about 6 weeks long. So by extension, it doesn't get all of that crap. Because that's one thing that contributes to it, is it goes on for so long that they have to haul out every last little bit of... Unless you're Michelle Bachmann and you just give the same stump speech and change the dates of the sinking of the troop transport Dorchester, but... Oh, God, we're going to miss her. But she's not going away. Andy writing in, noting, Green 960 conversation. One thing is talking about the transition to Glenn Beck, Dave Ramsey, among other righty talkers. Another is actually living the loss of progressive morning radio. Amen. It's a shocker, to say the least, a shocker. At 12 noon, 960 listeners can tune in to Randy Rhodes, but I grew disenchanted with her Obama apologies and Democratic sycophantic baloney years ago. This was a major reason I moved here. To get away from the pornographic blitz of right-wing fascist Edward L. Bernay mind control that saturates the majority of the country. I foresee a backlash from the local citizenry, and it may get ugly. If I were the folks at Clear Channel, I would move their local corporate headquarters site as far from San Francisco as possible. This may be a project for the folks at Occupy, and again, it may not be pretty for the folks at Clear Channel. I agree with Sandra. When I worked in New York with the pigs in Lower Manhattan, my fellow co-workers actually said, paraphrasing, "We don't want socialized medicine because then the blacks and Hispanics would get a free ride on our dime." Many of these greedy SOBs, says Andy, just don't see blacks and Hispanics as fellow Americans or even human beings. Bingo! They're foreign interlopers, not fellow citizens. That's the bottom line. We're dealing with pure racists. And yes, the ones I worked with, he refers to, and yes, they were rabid Repiglicans, just loving the plutocrats,
Plutocrat Mayor Bloomberg. The plutocrat's plutocrat. Ooh, that's a good one, Andy. Listen, I know a little bit about that transition. And I know, but I know it from the other end. I've been cruising along for a year and a half. We had doubled the station's listenership. I even offered to work for free. But hell wouldn't hold them because they were going to get rid of me and replace me with Michael Savage. It is a real shock. There are people who listen to this show on terrestrial radio that have never heard it, not once, since it left the airwaves. And I miss them and I wonder about them. Because I'm funny that way. But it was a real shock to get up on July the 1st, 2005, and know that there would be... I didn't get to do. So I do have a little bit of the understanding of exactly what Andy's talking about. And the sort of icky feeling that Tom had when he turned on the dial and there was Glenn Beck, Hustling Gold. Sheesh. Kim writing in, as a resident of Michigan, and remember when I was younger, I remember when Willard's father was our governor. Was he a Mormon also? Yes, he was. I never remember my father bringing this into the conversation in our home, and he was a diehard Republican. Sorry, Bob, I can't call my father a repiglick, and I loved him. Just a thought and a question here. I understand that. And you know what? I know people... Back then, so to speak, there were Republicans. And they were, oh, Jesus, you know, Eisenhower Republicans. And yes, they were tight-fisted, and yes, they could squeeze a nickel until you could hear Thomas Jefferson screaming from his grave. But they were not these Republicans. They were not Repiglickans. These are. Because the modern, understand, the modern GOP has, over the course of a generation about, been entirely transformed into the John Birch Society. In the battle of ideas inside, for the hearts and minds of the GOP, the John Birch Society and the Klan and the militia movement won. That old Republican who had come home from the Second World War, got himself a college education on the GI Bill, and maybe went to work at the local bank, and had his rotary meetings every week, and came home and literally smoked a pipe while wearing slippers and reading the evening paper, that guy is as gone as a Diplodocus. Gone! They don't exist! So I do understand that, but yes, yes, Kim, yes, George Romney was a Mormon. He was, in fact, what the Republicans like to call an illegal alien. Because it is the truth that when statehood was granted to Utah, it was granted to Utah on the condition that the state outlaw polygamy. And there was a great uproar within the Church of Latter-day Saints. The ones who were, there were those who were willing to go through the expedience of not being polygamous in order for Utah to have all the benefits of statehood. And there were those who said, nope, ain't gonna have nothing to do with it. And one of those was, who knows what his name was, you know, Ezekiel Hezekiah Romney, whatever, who literally pulled up stakes
and moved south until he was in Mexico, where he could continue living a polygamous lifestyle. And he led that lifestyle until such time as he re-entered the United States with his family, and did so technically illegally. Mitt Romney is the grandson. Willard Romney is the grandson of an illegal alien. He is the son of what right-wingers like to refer to as an anchor baby. Of course, he despises the Dream Act. You know what the Dream Act is. Yeah. Much, much more this evening, and we will get to it. We're going to take a little break. By the way, Bill in Cleveland, you got a big laugh and a big clap from Sandra for the Bobby Blue Bland reference. We will take a break and come back for your calls and a variety of other equally disturbing, bizarre stories. This is the Horn. This is America's liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Just found a red sock in the laundry while washing my Ku Klux Klan sheet. I hate when I show up at the meeting looking like I don't belong. I just want to be someplace where I can fit in. Last week I showed up, my Klan sheet was fitted. Tell me why me? Why can't I be down with the Knights of the Klan? Is there a higher power trying to keep me away? Hope that it's true, cause I had any clue. If it's so complicated, just joining the KKKK. That's one K too many, oy vey. There's no way they'll make me a member this way. I got a problem, low self-esteem. Lord, I've tried to make things better by joining a group of outcasts. Sheet, they might get cross by me. Why can't I be down with the Knights of the Klan? They're so religious, so I figure they're probably nice. But it's so disappointing when I hear them say that I won't get to spend my time hanging with the KKK. The problem with supremacists, they think they are superior, but it's not true. Not for this Jew, not for this black guy too. Just found a red star. Down with the Klan. Down with the
Just the racist. Oh, sorry, wasn't listening. 1, 2, 3.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, January 5th, 2012.
This government does not mean well for the Nigerian people.
Riots over oil in Nigeria. Victory over oil in Ecuador.
If you or I need tetracycline or penicillin, we need a doctor's prescription to get it. But if you're a farm animal, all you have to do is show up for breakfast.
Curbing drug abuse in farm animals. Antibiotic drug abuse, that is. Heat wave in Antarctica, plus mutant hybrid sharks. Yep, mutant hybrid sharks.
All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You're going to need a finger post.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Des, albeit mutant genes in farm animals, mutant sharks. What else do you have for us today?
Well, we'll get to those in a moment, but we do have a very oily report today. Violence in Nigeria over cuts in fuel subsidies. Police in Nigeria, Africa's most populous nation, are using tear gas and rubber bullets to quell mass rioting that has erupted in that country since the Nigerian government abruptly canceled fuel subsidies on New Year's Day in a bid to cut government spending. Fuel prices doubled overnight, beyond the reach of most Nigerians, with a gallon of gasoline now costing more than most Nigerians make in a day. The rioters are calling for a general strike in the next few days to force the government to reinstate the subsidies. Although Nigeria is a major crude oil producer, almost all of its oil is exported to foreign markets because Nigeria has no working refineries and little infrastructure and must import refined fuels at very high costs.
So it's turning into Mad Max in Nigeria at this point.
It looks pretty bad. It's a victory, though, for indigenous tribes against big oil in Ecuador. An Ecuadorian appeals court on Tuesday upheld a ruling against oil giant Chevron, ordering it to pay $18 billion, that's billion with a B, $18 billion in damages to indigenous tribes of the Amazon who say Chevron has polluted and destroyed their lands and health. Chevron says it's not liable because the damage was caused by oil giant Texaco prior to its purchase by Chevron.
And how long has this case been working through the courts?
20 years.
20 years. And does this settle it, or is there still another appeal that Chevron can try at this point?
Chevron says it will appeal. But it's not just in Nigeria. Deep fossil fuel subsidies are employed by every government in the world, including the United States. A new investigation of the complex and often hidden subsidies in the U.S. tax code show U.S. taxpayers give the fossil fuel industry no less than 250 different kinds of supports and subsidies every year. Those 250 taxpayer subsidies range from direct cash payments to tax credits, tax loopholes, and other mechanisms that are specific to the fossil fuel industry and not enjoyed by other industries.
What happened to that idea that the federal government shouldn't be picking winners and losers?
That's only promoted by people who don't want renewables to succeed.
Ah, so we will be picking winners and losers, we just won't be picking renewables. Got it.
One small step in the fight against the rise of antibiotic-resistant superbugs.
It's alive!
The Food and Drug Administration on Wednesday announced it would severely restrict the use of one class of antibiotics given to farm animals. Such antibiotic abuse has been implicated in the rise of antibiotic-resistant superbugs now threatening public health. Bob Deans of the Natural Resources Defense Council explains in an interview with MSNBC.
80% of the antibiotics in this country going not to humans, but to animals, not because they're sick, not because they need the medicine, but because it does help fatten them up for the slaughter. And the problem is, when you overdo it with antibiotics, you promote the growth of these super germs that are resistant to antibiotics. They then make their way to humans.
Delicious.
Yep, public health organizations praised the FDA, but said restricting just one class of antibiotics isn't enough because the FDA is leaving intact the remaining 98% of antibiotics that are given to farm animals.
There they go, picking winners and losers again.
Finally, Antarctica is in the middle of a heat wave. The South Pole hit its all-time highest temperature on record on Christmas Day 2011 at just under 10 degrees Fahrenheit, breaking a previous record set in 1978. The warming at the South Pole may be behind the discovery of mutant hybrid sharks.
What?
Off the coast of Australia. Okay, they're not really mutants, but marine biologists have confirmed the first known population of hybrid sharks, the offspring of two distinctly different shark species that normally would not interact. It's an extremely rare occurrence in mammals like sharks. More tropical shark species are being found in previously cold water territories as climate change heats the ocean.
Why do our reports sound more and more like Hollywood movies each and every week? Is it just me?
What? You mean life imitating art?
Mad Max, mutant sharks, what next? Find out at our website, greennews.bradblog.com, where we cover all of today's stories and the ones we couldn't get to. You can also download us anytime via iTunes. You can listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher. And, of course, follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From BradBlog.com, live in Hollywood, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyle.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Hooray for Hollywood. That phony, super coney Hollywood. They come from Chiller Coffees and Patukas with their bazookas to get
Total Genius. It's not your mother's soap.
Hey, dude, wait 1 second. It's totally my mother's soap.
Total Genius. It's not your father's soap.
No. See, right here, I've got soap for my dad.
And you know what? It's not just soap. Look, stuff for my dog.
Holy crap! There's even stuff for all my pregnant friends.
And hippies.
And hey, dude, loosen that tie. Try it again.
Total Genius. We got your soap right here.
And got your bath and body stuff.
www.bubblegenius.com.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Hour two underway. Teenage Mutant Ninja Sharks, maybe? Yeah, look, it's more reason, it's more common sense, more science. Not that that's going to make a hill of beans difference to the Rick Santorums and the weirdos who follow them. Because they are. They're weirdos. They're bizarre people. Anybody who sits... Well, never mind. It's not like you don't know that. 10 minutes past the hour... And we received another kind contribution. And you know what? I'm just going to say this. We've taken care of the night's fundraising two nights in a row. And that is awesome news. And that means I'm not going to say another blessed word about fundraising this evening. Can't make me. Okay? Cool. Good. Kim writing back in, she says... Thanks for answering, raising my question about Willard's dad. As we listen nightly, we've wondered this, and you nailed it on the head. My father was a Republican. I like to think in today's world he would be a very liberal Republican. However, funny enough, I remember going to a Nixon rally my father organized as he ran for president. Yeah, but you know what? Okay, Nixon was a crook. By any yardstick. A hopeless crook. A misanthrope. But the fact of the matter is, Richard Nixon would not be welcome in the Republican Party today. Neither would Nelson Rockefeller. Because they would be deemed too liberal. If you look at Ronald Reagan's record, notwithstanding the fact that people like Rick Santorum drag his corpse out of the ground and flog it about for the faithful, he wouldn't be welcome in the Republican Party either. That is how far gone it is. And see, that's the trick. We've got to survive the Republican Party for about 25, 30 more years tops, and then it's just gone. It's dead. Because the country will have changed that much by the simple forces of demographics. Of course, by then the Democratic Party will have filled the vacuum left by the Republican Party, and hopefully something will have arisen that will more resemble the needs of the 99%. Right? Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Okay, 2 days in a row.
Hey, Tracy, what's up?
Well, I don't know where to start between listening to what Newt Gingrich said about, you know, coming to the NAACP. I want him to go. I want him to stand up in front of a bunch of black folks and say what he said and pray to God that I can't even talk. Because what did he say that, you know, that black people, basically he was saying that the Negroes were the only ones that use food stamps and Social Security. Is that basically what, was that the...
Well, yeah, that's him and Santorum both. And see, that's the thing. The night of the Iowa carcass, thank you. Dr. Newton Leroy Gingrich, amateur paleontologist.
Does anyone know what a paleontologist is?
Well, apparently it's somebody who deals with climate change, according to him. So I guess the answer is no. But anyway, that night he said he was going to go to New Hampshire and be Rick Santorum's little attack dog. So naturally he's picked up the theme that Rick Santorum first put out there, that he doesn't want to make black people's lives better by giving them other people's money.
Right. OPP. Other people's property. Okay. So he's going to go to the... He wants Ben Jealous, now current president of the NAACP,
yes,
to invite him to the next NAACP convention.
And Newt, we've got you a nice white robe to wear.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have a burning cross in front of wherever they're having this convention.
But it'll be from Tiffany's, so, you know, Newt will come.
Right. Exactly, since he has an account there. So, and he's going to tell black people, black men, what needs to be done, because he has the answer for all the ills of that's happening with the black community, right?
Don't you love the fact that he can address the black, allegedly address the black male mortality rate, and use that as a jumping off point for what's wrong with Social Security instead? I mean, because this is a level of sort of cognitive dissonance, cultural disconnect thing where, because I can't see that topic being brought up. Well, it's kind of like what we were talking about. Rick Santorum said that Waiting for Superman was a movie about black children. And I said, that's like saying Gone with the Wind is a movie about drapery. And
right.
It's the same thing, saying that they're... No, well, you know what's the problem with dying black and young? You don't get to collect Social Security. And never even go into the fact... You know what's wrong with dying young and black? Dying young and black.
Dying young and black. and uneducated and underemployed and in jail and, you know, and the programs that were there, like when my dad graduated, I don't think my dad graduated from high school. But because of the programs like the Urban League and the like, my job, my dad became a union, guess what, carpenter. Hello.
Yeah.
You know, and because of programs like this, that, you know, and union jobs and whatnot and so forth, raised up a lot of black men who would not have otherwise gone to college or anything like that.
Oh, and look, where did the unions go?
Oh, speaking of unions and the bullshit that has been propagated by, you know, the right-wing media saying that unions and employee-run things do not, bring profit and whatnot and so forth. And remember how you were saying that you wish somebody from another country would listen to, like, with the socialized medicine and all that and how it's bringing these countries down? Well, on Mr. Tom Hartman's show this morning.
Yes, ma'am.
Guess what he talked about?
What?
He talked about Germany and the fact that the average auto worker in Germany, where they have unions and socialized medicine and that, you know.
Pensions and vacations and, yeah.
And that their, you know, kids pretty much can go to school for free and stuff like that. Guess how much the average auto worker makes in Germany?
Do tell, please.
$66 an hour.
Well, that explains the sticker price on the new Mercedes.
But still, not only that, now Germany, last I checked, was a much smaller country than we are, yes?
Yes.
They made more cars per capita than we made in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and guess what? Guess what? What else happened? What had happened else, too? They say that they're, because as a law in Germany, that on the board of directors from any company.
Yeah, that you've got to have workers.
You have to have workers to make the decision as to what is going to happen for that company.
Yeah, isn't that just crazy?
Oh, and guess what? They made profit in the billions.
And, okay. Well, and you couple that with the fact that Germany has a very, very determined manufacturing policy that they will protect their industries at all cost.
Oh, I forgot to, and I left that part out. Thank you for bringing, and that's another thing that Mr. Tom Hartman talked about, too.
Tom's smart man.
Oh.
Mighty smart man.
You educated. So, when I hear about these companies here that talks about, because see, I'm trying to, you know, because I'm still resonating with the help, so I'm going to try my best to talk like the folk in that movie.
Oh no. I'm going to get an email.
So when I hear that unions in this country that said that they don't, you know, these countries are going under and all that, and then we talk about folks that supposedly, you know, Walmart and all this, and, you know, if it wasn't, you know, unions are going to be the death of the country, how? If these countries are still, if they're manufacturing and all this and everything is still making profit, isn't that kind of like blowing the right-wing lie out the water?
Right, straight up.
I'm just saying, you know, I mean, because I just, but then again, seeing that I am, you know, we, you know, in our little circle of people, we're preaching to the choir. And, you know, thank God. But
you know what? That's often used as a phrase for things that, you know, preaching to the choir, you know, the choirs. But you know what? The choir needs preaching to.
True.
Because it's not fun to sit there in the choir loft and look at the preacher's back all day. Sometimes preacher needs to turn around and talk to the choir a little bit.
Can I see the, you know, your face is good, you know, the back of your neck. And, you know, but it just tickles me because, you know, like I said, I go on my sabbaticals when I don't listen to the news and I don't listen to you guys or Stephanie, well, Stephanie, no, anyway. and, you know, and Tom Hartman and stuff, because, see, it depresses, it makes me happy in one regard, because I know that there are actually still intelligent life out there in the United States, but it depresses me because there's only a small percentage of the citizenry of this country that can think for themselves. And that's rather disheartening for a poor colored girl like myself. Like I said it.
You said it.
Get ready for the emails, Bob. But it's just, you know, between the craziness of Newt Gingrich saying that he knows what is, you know, about the problem with black men. Maybe if you brought union jobs back to this country, maybe if you brought manufacturing jobs back to this country, maybe if you did the things that, you know, all the strides that we made.
Maybe if the businesses that want to do business in this country didn't have to sweat the cost of health care.
Exactly.
I mean, because those examples really exist, Tracy. There was an auto manufacturer, maybe it was Toyota, that was going to build one of these gargantuan auto plants. And because of the corporate philosophy in Japan, you know, necessarily they want to make them cost competitive, make it possible for people to buy the cars, but also do so at in such a way as to make the company and the shareholders profit and everything. They looked all over the United States, and then they looked up in Canada and said, wait a minute, everybody working in Canada has health care, and we don't have to factor that into our cost of production. Guess where we're building the new plant?
In Canada.
Bingo.
You know, because the other thing Mr. Tom Hartman talked about was how much an auto worker who has been an auto worker for some time, he makes about, you know, with benefits and stuff like that, about $33 an hour, whereas a new hire auto worker is only making $14 an hour. Bob, you know how much I was, when I was a union employee, I was a cashier at Rouse. I was a journeyman cashier before I left.
Okay.
In 1990 is when I left Rouse, or around then anyway, 89, 90. When I left Rouse in 1989 or whatever, I was making $16 an hour in 1989.
That ain't bad.
Okay.
I mean, it's not $66 an hour making cars in Germany, but they
still. But in 1989, I was making $16 an hour. I could afford an apartment. And on top of that, I was getting full benefits. I worked part-time, but I got full benefits. That's how I had my son and got to, you know, pay nothing. You know, the union is nowhere near as strong as it was when I was in the union. And it's nowhere near as strong as, I'm pretty sure, the union, the United Auto Workers Union.
Yeah, on a full-time basis, that works out to about, what, $33,000 a year?
Pretty much. Pretty much. You know, in $1988, not too shabby.
No. You could have a life.
I could have a life. I could have a life. But now, you know, you got somebody coming in 2012 making $14 an hour. Now, albeit it's in Detroit, and I know, Gigi, you know, Mommy, the cost of living in Detroit is a lot more depressed than it is out here, you know, in California. And if you're full-time, you could probably make it in Detroit. However, $14 an hour, really? I last time I checked, everything else is going up. Rent, food, utilities, and all that. So I don't understand how they think that $14 an hour is awesome. When I hear people, I was talking to one of the order takers at the taxi company, and she was all excited because she makes $12 an hour. I'm like, what the hell can you do with $12 an hour in L.A.? Other than, I said, do you have your own place? She's like, now this is a grown-ass woman. She's in her 50s, but she has to have a room. She has to have like three roommates so they can have a place to live. Three. At 50-some-odd years old, should you be still having roommates?
See, No. I will soon be 49 years old, and don't tell the kids, but we're beginning to look forward to the day when they go off and have their lives and stuff.
Right. And thank God, Well, and I thank God every day for my child who is at 23 years old. He has his own apartment. And, of course, I still, you know, every so often I get that phone call, you know.
Oh, yeah. Not as right. And by the way, Tracy, by the way, David in Tennessee writing in, he says, Germany actually does less than we think toward pure protectionism. A, Germans know without anyone mandating it that it's best to buy German. And B, the governments at all levels in Germany constantly work at creating education, health care, and economic policy that makes it more likely that the well-paid worker can be more productive than any auto worker in the world. And then this is so telling. They do not, however, create stock market scams that benefit the top 0.1%. There you go.
Well, see, if
some answer,
you know,
there's that old thing from Sherlock Holmes that says, or no, it's Occam's razor, isn't it? That says the simplest answer is the most elegant and most likely the correct answer.
Good.
Like, and they do not use their entire capital structure as a means of creating speculative scams. Now, some of that may be coming to an end with the financial crisis they have going on there.
Right.
But
which it was, you know, they should have just left their own. Everybody should have just had their own money and left it alone, you know, instead of having the European Union. But that's a whole other conversation.
Indeed.
But you know, when you think about, you know, these people, these, you know, the plutocrats and these selfish bastards that would rather see somebody like me or some of my Hispanic friends starve, because not because of anything else other than this pure straight out hatred. Right now, our governor Jerry Moonbeam Brown, he was talking about the cuts that we're going to have to give, you know, and of course, you know, he's trying to raise taxes on, you know, the top 1% in California. And, you know, out here, we got plenty of money out here. And, you know, and of course, it's probably definitely not going to pass. But what's going to happen is people are going to still get, they're cutting, the draconian cuts are going to be so bad for people on welfare. Are you ready for how much money? They're going to still get their welfare checks and stuff like that. But to guess how much money is going to be brought down to $1980.
But prices aren't going to come down to 1980 prices now, are they?
No, they are not. And he's like, look, people, there has to be something done because.
But you know, that's the funny thing though, Tracy. The obvious thing to be done, at least in California, is to get the hell rid of Proposition 13. But that thing was made in such a way that it's almost impossible to get rid of, and it tells you a little bit about the success of right-wing messaging, that anyone who suggests that it actually takes tax revenue to build a healthy nation, state, county, municipality, whatever, is immediately treated as a political leper.
Exactly. And like I said, and I know we've had this conversation before, I was like the last class when I graduated. I mean, because Prop 13 hit when I was in probably elementary school going into junior high. And, of course, by the time I graduated from high school, the cuts were coming, but nowhere near like they did, you know, from 20 years to 30 years later. But, you know, when I was in school, we still had music programs. We still had science programs. We still had...
Journalism, you know, class, speech, debate, theater.
Jazz
ensemble.
You know, we even... Shop classes, you know. Shop classes, auto shop, wood shop.
You know, they used to... Yeah, you know, we usually talk about things like art and journalism things. But, you know, that's another thing that has gone with all the other austerity cuts to education. They used to teach shop here at this little high school where my kids go. There's no shop classes anymore.
And see, and those classes were for those kids who had no, it's like, look, I'm in school because I have to be here. But at least if I'm in, you know, woodwork or, you know, electrics, because we had wood shop, electric shop, we had auto
metal shop, yeah, auto body.
you know, and all that, because there were those kids that, like, okay, I'm not going to college, but at least, you know, in auto shop and all these other things, I'm going to learn a trade in high school.
And be able to earn a nice living.
A nice living. You know, I know a ton of my friends that when I graduated from high school, and they went to auto shop, and they went on to the GM plant in Van Nuys, you know, of course, before it shut down. But...
Or you become a Mercedes mechanic at the local dealership, and you get to wear one of those white hot, you know, one of those white doctor's smocks, because yeah, they do that, you know, with the little... But no, there's so much, and that's all gone. You know, the guy who raised four children and put them through college because he was your local TV repairman, he's gone, Tracy.
The guy that, like you said, the ones that, the television repairman, the shoe, you know, the shoe repair guy, all these people, like you said, who raised families and put them through college. What tickles me and disturbs me are, you know, these crazy people who are so anti-union and all this, and I don't know if I've mentioned this to you before, I wonder how many of these people who are now in government, who are, you know, who talk so much crap about unions, how many of their parents were union employees?
Well, there you go.
And how many of those union jobs put those assholes through college?
And you know what? There's thousands of them, for instance, in the Deep South.
Yes.
Thousands of them.
And all these people, all these representatives and congressmen and state senators and all that, just from Detroit, just from Michigan. You cannot tell me that anybody that is our age and slightly older, you know, parents did not have union jobs that are now representing this country or this
or government home. Jobs. I mean, look, Rick Santorum's daddy.
The coal miner.
No, his granddaddy was a coal miner. His daddy was a shrink. At a VA hospital.
Oh, wow!
Rick Santorum has never known a day when his lips were not wrapped around the public teat.
Well, it's like our girl Michelle Bachman and her, you know...
Oh, sure! Farm subsidies. And how many foster children have they raised? You know what?
And you cannot tell me that they're not getting a dime. What state is she from?
Minnesota. Minnesota.
Okay. So you cannot tell me that whatever county, you know, because here in California, it's by the county, is the one that pays for foster care for children. So you cannot tell me whatever county that bitch is from.
If you've raised 15 or 22 or whatever number it is, foster children, all girls, mind you.
Gary.
If you've done that, you have made a tidy sum because that's a nice business, foster parenting.
Well, let me tell you. Now, when I had custody of my nephew, and because he was not a blood relative, I got money from the county of L.A. until he kept screwing up, and they just said, you know, we're not going to give him any more money. And I'm like, okay, whatever. But you know how much, now, this is what tickles me. Now, at the same time, I was getting money for my nephew. I was getting damn near, just for one nephew, one child, almost $900 a month. For foster for caring for my foster care for my nephew, but when I was on AFDC, TANF, whatever the hell they call it now, screw it, it's the county, you know, I was, for me and my son, two people, I was getting like $300 a month.
Yeah.
So, you cannot, it's foster care is a big business, especially out here.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
It is.
And you know what you get, among other things, if you're getting money for foster care, you know what, at least in some states, you know what you're also eligible for?
Food stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Food stamps and Medicare.
Oh, Michelle and Marcus were food stamp kings and queens, and you can figure out which one's which. No doubt about it. No
exactly.
Doubt about it.
No doubt. I mean, so they're getting money from... You know, farm subsidies, they're getting money from foster care, they're getting money for food stamps and all this.
And it's okay as long as they're the ones getting it. It goes back to what David in Tennessee said a few minutes ago about the fact that they want it all for themselves. If they don't benefit by it, it isn't happening. It's the old thing about trees falling in the forest when nobody's there to hear it. If privileged white people don't get the benefits are no benefit.
Exactly.
I mean, and talking about folks, kids leaving, you know, leaving the nest and everything. Isaac just wrote in, Tracy, and he said, the kids are not leaving, Bob. In this current economy, they can't survive on their own like we did. They need help. He said, hell, us grown folk need help, too. And what Isaac is pointing to, Tracy, is the fact that what we're seeing, for all that the right wing talks about supporting the family, what they are either intentionally or unintentionally doing is social engineering to destroy, absolutely destroy the so-called nuclear family and go back to the extended family. Because they'll sit there and oh, this is a shame, that guy, some kid living in his basement, blogging in his pajamas. Right? I mean, I've heard it, you've heard it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it's the situation they sought to create. I mean, how much money do you have to make a year to buy a house that costs $500,000? And where you live, a house that costs $500,000 probably doesn't have plumbing. And that's not me gooning on you. That's just, you know, real estate prices in Southern California.
That's a fallacy. I mean, you can't even get a condo out here for less than a quarter of a mil.
Right. I mean, I remember when, remember that stupid Who Wants to Marry a Millionaire a long time ago? That only went one round because it was such a flop. Well, it was a, part of it was the guy was a millionaire because he had a three-bedroom ranch home in San Diego. The house was no better looking than the little house that I grew up on in on a street in Alabama that had the same three bedrooms and a hell of a lot bigger yard.
Exactly.
That cost my dad $20,000 in 1960. Which was a princely ransom in its own right.
Well, when my parents, in 1971, when I was 6 years old, my mom and my stepfather bought a house in West L.A., and we were the first black family on the block, and, you know, that was the beginning of white flight that got out here to the valley. That house was a three-bedroom, two-bath, with a living room, dining room, den, breakfast nook, pool, patio with the built-in barbecue and all that. In 1971, that house cost $25,000. That same house now is 1.2 mil.
Jiminy.
And
that's not just the inflation of the value of the dollar. That also represents where the wealth is going.
Mm-hmm.
You see what Yeah. Tracy, this has been a magnificent conversation. Do you need to be on hold?
No, I figured out how to listen to my computer.
Yay, Tracy!
It's only because of everybody in the chat room. I'm like, I'm not an idiot, and I knew there was a way to do it. And they're like, don't you have iTunes? You know, I love my people in the chat room. I'm like, don't you have iTunes? I'm like, that's it. Because, you know, brain only has so many more, you know, synapses that connect. And if I don't do something on a regular basis, I forget how to do it.
Look, if I'm gone 3 days from the microphone here, I forget all the buttons I have to push to make the show go. So, no, don't goon on yourself because I'm the original where that's concerned.
You know, so the thing is, now I know how. Oh, see, now I know how to do it. I'm like, I'm so excited. I'm like, okay, I'm not an idiot. So I go to iTunes and go to radio and then, you know, news and then find you. And so that gets me excited because, and it helps me to call my 23 know-it-all son to tell him that his mom figured something out without me having to call him on the, you know, for the 30th time.
Yeah, it's like setting the clock on your own DVD player.
Clocks don't, they don't have clocks on DVD players anymore.
Oh, no, they don't. See, I'm a Luddite.
So it's only on the VCR.
Goes to show you how far gone I am. I ain't got one. The only time we watch those things is on some computer.
Wow. Okay, well, there's that. So like I said, you know, as I said last night and yesterday, you know, may God bless you and keep you. You guys are, you know, as awesome as usual. and, you know, all that good shit.
All right. Tracy, you take care of
you. You too, my dear. Bye-bye.
Bye. Sometimes it can be a challenge. I mean, really. I mean, you've heard, how many programs? Oh, forgot to press a button. Or, you know, I'll get an email from David. You know, boom, boom, boom. Is this thing on? And I realize, oh, that one too. Oh, missed a knob. In fact, David in Tennessee noting, please remember that one L Michelle. Mom and Dad forgot the other L. One L Michelle has never had a private sector paycheck. She went from the IRS as an employer to elected office, if I'm correct, and I do believe you are. Stack all that foster care money and crop subsidy, and you have the most entitled couple I may have ever heard of. Oh, yo, what's the point being a Republican if you can't, a Republican if you can't get both trotters in the trough, right? Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, listen, so, to Robert, yeah, I mean, it's maybe a bit flippant to say that it's just too many black and brown people, but if you look at what Truman was doing, he was, you know, like after World War II, like all the Western countries was, you know, planning on introducing the national health care. England did it, and we were about to do it, but Truman didn't realize what he was going to be facing, which was like an onslaught of, Red Scare, I think was the majority of it. But then in the South, the biggest fear was, oh, no, the Negroes would have access to the hospitals. We'd have to desegregate.
Yeah, and you know, he got into some of that fight with the successful effort to desegregate the military.
Mm.
And
that was an executive. I mean, he was able to do that. He had control over that along with the civil servant, which is, I forget the name of the act, but he was the one that eliminated, insofar as by law, patronage.
Right, so, and the bigots in the Congress just kind of had to sit there and take it.
Right, so, but when he went to do what, like I said, every post-war country was doing at that time, which was like, shit, we can't have these wars anymore, so we need to set up a safety net. And that included health care, which is what the Europeans had in mind. You know, if they give the people a little bit of something, you know, maybe the wars will dissipate. I mean, that's sort of the idea behind all that. But here in the U.S., you know, we got that the sort of age-old sin of this country, which is race. And because race is such a big problem here, it minimizes any kind of social or societal cohesion. That's why I always laugh when they talk about, well, how is Japan able to withstand decade upon decade of this sort of deflation and, you know, just permanent economic slowdown? And the answer to that is the cohesion they have is because it's homogenized, like some damn...
Homogeneity.
Yeah. And they don't discuss that in the U.S. You know, it's always sort of, people always are sort of surprised when that's brought up and you tie it into the welfare state. And for the life of me, I don't understand, you know, is that just the sort of fake facade they try to run? Because it seems pretty obvious to me that the sort of, quote, fruit salad melting pot, whatever the hell you want to call it here, is a hindrance to any kind of, social programs, and they always try to blame it on because we're a market-based economy, but that's not true for other Western nations. So I think that bigotry, prejudice, and the other plays right into that. I think there's a great argument for that.
I don't think you can avoid it, but it also calls BS on the notion of the melting pot. This pot ain't melting nothing.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I call it a fruit salad.
Apple's going to stay over there.
Right.
Walnuts.
You know, I mean, all the sort of...
It's not even so much a fruit salad as it is a fruit platter, where everything has its own little compartment.
Well, you know, it's like, I mean, all the sort of racial lexicon and nomenclature, all that in this country is so fucked up because it's such a horrible ailment that we face. I mean, you know, I still recoil at the whole African American label, because I'm sorry, you know, Africa is a fucking continent. You know, Italy is a country. So if you're an Italian American, yeah, I can relate. But I'm sorry, I've always been really
right, because the appropriate comparative would be to say I am an Ugandan American
or
Liberian American, Ghanaian American.
You know, which, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, it don't make any sense. I mean, the manifestation of that is Obama, because he is an African-American, if you want to use it in that context.
Well, a Kenyan-American.
He's a Kenyan-American, but...
Oh, but Jesus, don't say that. I'll get a call from Donald Trump. Or Mitt Romney, yeah.
Well, no, but I just sort of, I don't, you know, that's why I always say Negro or Black or any other word, because... I relate to the color in relations to it being a struggle, you know, the blackness, not related to any sort of country and origins, because we were snatched as a people. There is no country of origin except for the 300 years that my family has been here. So what does that make me?
That's like me saying I refer to my Scots-Irish heritage.
Yeah, well,
because I mean, they came from there.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, I understand, you know, the sort of...
But I don't, you know, I don't sit around pining for the old country. The old sod. No, I don't do that. But all of that, Sandra, is nothing more than a manifestation of white discomfort.
Yeah, well, and it's just sort of, you know...
Because God knows we can't just say, hey, neighbor...
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. So you don't really, you know, the sort of being united under the Bill of Rights or the document of the Constitution or Declaration of Independence, you know, it's a really weak wireframe if you're not a white person.
If you're not a white male, I mean, if we're going to talk about the founding documents.
And before, you know, one of our really frightening presidents, Mr. Jackson, if you were a non-landholding white male, you didn't have much going on either.
It didn't count.
You know, and the one upside you can say about those documents is that it does provide a framework for each group to struggle to get access to those words. I mean... That is the only good thing about the U.S. And as those things are being shut down right in front of our eyes, you know, it makes this country even less palatable.
It's frightening, but by the same token, I guess, you know, if I may indulge my little Pollyanna nature for a minute, it's also encouraging, because instead of white folks having to. And you know, I'm uncomfortable because, you know, I'm white folks. But instead of white folks having an actual conversation about going from having to compartmentalize the skin pigment on the planet, instead of doing that work, we're just going to let the tide of time and population changes and genetics take care of it for them. Till they're not here. And that's that, you know, that's that just horrifying little core at the heart of every Republican, at the heart of every John Bircher, at the heart of every all of them, is that they know, Sandra, that in just by projecting out what the census is, 20, 30 years from now, they're irrelevant. 100 years from now, you will not be able to elect a white president in the United States. And I don't say that as some sort of, I think that's good news.
Well, which is why they want to rapidly destroy the rest of the safety net. It comes full circle, too. You know, there is that. It's like, well, hell, in 20, 30 years, there ain't going to be nothing but brown people trying to fillet. So fuck this. Kill it. I can bring it into that frame, too. So... I just think it's all across the board in this country. When you talk about ending it, you know, they're always quick to say, well, no, not for these old ones now, for people coming up. Well, if most of the people coming up are of color...
There you go.
It makes it even more of an urgency to get rid of it. I mean, you know, and it's horrible to sort of think about it in that terms, but...
Well, I mean, there's a bunch of money there, and they better get it before... Right.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's hard for me to back away from that analysis because, you know, they're so vicious in their need to dismantle it. And, you know, and nobody with any sense is buying that it's better for us not to have a safety net. You know, Rick Santorum, he can go pound some sand up his ass. He's full of it. As we saw with that thing today, with him talking about, oh, how about three? It's like, nigga, shut the hell up. Some people was laughing at his ass, okay? They're booing him and laughing. And it's just like, yeah.
Did you get the sense that the room was full of, and this is, again, this goes back to the same argument, young people?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You listen to it, and they were just completely, not only were they mortified, they were just like, oh, no, you need to bounce. And they booed his ass, and he's coming out with this reason. Reason shouldn't even be associated with Santorum.
No.
He's the most unreasonable and most unreasoned freak I've ever seen. And to me, I'm like, good luck with your new high profile, you freak.
And
you
hope
know?
It, yeah.
Wow.
And again, you know, as we touched on, no, I want to see, I really do, I want to see Newt Gingrich at that NAACP convention.
We're going to bring his, he's going to bring his hood, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll have a nice white robe for him to wear.
I mean, no. I mean, all of them are just, but that's why it's so depressing when I open up the, when I, you know, go to New York Times and I see story after story talking about these people as if they're viable. Then I switch over to the foreign press, and they're like, you know, it's looking like something from, what is that famous painting when the man has his head is melting and his...
Oh, the Scream?
Right. You know, the stories are reported in that way because they're like, oh, my God, the Rick Santorum. You know what I mean? Just a complete, you know, the sort of view of the right of America outside of America is a bit sort of like, geez, you know.
Oh, and by the way, you're getting props from Tracy. She said, I consider myself an American of slave descent. Go Sandra. And you know what? That is an appropriate moniker. It's not... It doesn't reflect a continent. It reflects a status.
Yeah, I mean, it's just a state of being. I mean, that was the whole thing. I don't know. I just, you know, I'm always a bit... hesitant with Kwanzaa and that madness too, but that's another conversation. I'm just not interested in the made up ethno, you know, Afrocentric gibberish. It's like,
well, if you ever want to watch all the shades of pink to red to purple that a white person can turn, be around some of that select crowd and mention to them that anthropologically speaking, we're all African Americans, because there's not a human on this planet who did not come from a little remnant band of about 2,000 proto-humans, early humans on the African continent. Every last one of us. Even Newton Leroy Gingrich and his big old head.
Yeah.
You know, Africa is the mother continent.
No, yeah, I mean, but it's just...
Because white people will stop... You know which white people I'm talking about. You know, the real crackers. The folks that were rooting hard for Clemson last night. They will turn every shade that a white person can turn before... spontaneous human combustion at merely the mention that I ain't related to I never come from no monkey. You know, that's where that convergence between fundamentalism, white people, and the rejection of the theory of evolution and natural selection all just reach full flower. And it's a beautiful thing.
Well, I mean, yeah, no, I mean, it's, but it's just, it's so saps the energy right out of you. You know what I mean? And it's just hard for me to, I can't even understand, you know, how some of these white people function every day. But they have big, you know, people like Rick Santorum. I mean, and he's going down to, well, he has New Hampshire, and he's running right down to South Carolina to lap it up, right?
Oh, and it's that's going to be more fun than New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah, New Hampshire, and no, the South Carolina is going to be, I mean, all of them are popping up except for Michelle, right?
Michelle's done. She quit.
Right, but Rick Perry, he going to be there, because I read what he said, I feel real comfortable down there, and I'm like, damn.
I'll bet you do.
You know, sheets and whatnot.
Considering the name of your ranch, I'll bet you feel real comfortable.
Oh, God, you know what? I had forgotten about that. That's niggerhead. Yes. Deliver me. You see what I'm saying? So, Robert, good morning. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. welcome to our world.
America, man. Shit. Yeah, it is. Sometimes when I'm talking and you think about it, it just sounds bonkers, okay? Straight up crazy up in here. It really does.
Well, I mean, and it's because of the way my mind works. I just can't imagine what the people of Planet Norblap 12 think, or will think, you know, a couple of thousand years from now, when they get the transmission of Rick Santorum's Iowa speech.
Well, it'd be like First Contact. Remember that movie?
Right, yeah, exactly. No, I mean, there's going to be a meeting at Galactic Central Headquarters, and this whole little ghetto arm of the galaxy is going to be quarantined.
Well, you remember that? That's what I think of that movie, First Contact, when, you know, I guess, you know, television signals from Adolf Hitler was...
Well, because that was the very first television broadcast, the 1936
right.
Munich Olympics.
Right. Anyway, yes, I... Same deal. Sans the sort of, you know, kind of fascist Jodie Foster. Sorry, I have issues with her. She's desperate to make that movie with Lynn Riefenstahl.
Oh, Leni Riefenstahl, yeah.
She admires her.
Yeah, the Leni Riefenstahl story. You have to say Stahl story.
Yeah, and Jodie Foster admires. I'm like, oh boy, girl. You need to back off of that one. But anyway.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Mel Gibson will produce it.
Oh, well, they're big buds. So.
Well, they are.
Right. If he's walking around with a beaver, that movie, God, Lord. You know, help us. Help us now. Has anyone seen that? We already drifted our little conversation.
No, we're just over in the shallow end of the pool now. That's all, Sandra.
Oh no!
But I'm in I opened the microphone in a really good mood because of what my Mountaineers did last night.
Shut up! I mean, were they gonna run that shit to 100?
I was begging. It was the opening of the fourth quarter and whenever the last time we scored was. And I'm sitting there screaming at the television, onside kick!
No, because they're getting I heard a lot of different people really giving them attitude for, you know, all of a sudden, you know how they get all real twisted when people pile on the scores? And I'm just like, come on with all that. Where are we living?
Well, at some point in time, is the defense's job not to stop the offense from scoring?
Well, exactly. To me, I'm like, don't.
But again, there's a double standard involved. You know, first of all, they had an NFL crew calling the game last night, Sandra. And Jaws Jaworski and John Gruden and whoever other dude was did not sound like they'd seen a college ball game in a while.
Oh, Chucky was calling it?
Yeah, Chucky was calling it. And okay, what was the score at the beginning of the third quarter? I mean, it was out of hand already, way out of hand. 42-20, something like that.
Right, but they was giving Dude a hard time because he brought back his your team brought back their first core, didn't they?
Yeah.
Or something crazy.
Yeah, but Gruden says, well, you know, all Clemson has to do is play Clemson's style of ball, and they'll be right back in this.
Oh, right. Well, that probably didn't go over too well.
Yeah, oh, it was. But, you know, no respect. Now, if that had been Joe Paterno running up the score, or Jimmy Johnson, or Les Miles, or anybody else, you know, the big name folks, well, you know, they're just, that's, those are style points.
Well, no, but they, I heard people talk about, well, it's a marginal division, and, you know, just really sort of kind of shitty about the whole thing about that game last night.
Yeah, the funny thing is the marginal division's 3-1 in bowl games.
Well, it's whatever. I'm just, this is the sort of talk, and I'm thinking, what's that all about, you know?
And, well, I despise the ACC, and I'll get mail from, sorry, Tosh. But I despise them for sitting there and cherry-picking Syracuse and Pitt. Really? You want Syracuse and Pitt, but you don't want WVU? And so now we find ours. I mean, this. I mean, it just pisses me off, and it's a function of predatory capitalism as much as anything else is. That my beloved Mountaineers, the most storied program in college football, never to have won a national championship, in order to be able to have a shot at playing in a meaningful bowl game at the end of the year, now has to play road games in Ames, Iowa, and Austin, Texas, and Stillwater, Oklahoma, and Norman, Oklahoma, and Waco, and Lubbock.
That's a lot of traveling.
Well, and you know, okay, so football's a revenue generator. Maybe it'll come out a wash. But what happens when you have to send, and I'm not being derisive about this, this is reality, what happens when you have to send the women's softball team to Waco and Lubbock and Stillwater? Then, I mean, it's gonna be a financial disaster.
Right. So yeah, no. So you're saying that the whatever games that are coming to the football program is just gonna be a wash because of all the other expenses, right?
Yeah, we should have stayed in the Big East and been really, really nice about things and tried to wrangle ourselves an SEC bid. But no, if you want to play, no, you got to do it now. You got to find you a conference. I guess we're lucky we're not playing in the PAC, whatever it is, with USC and Oregon.
Yeah, I'm about to say you'd be playing. You'd be out here playing UCLA next or some crap.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. No, that is. Listen, the whole sort of college program is really sort of, it's like night and day. I don't know what it is now. I guess it's just all about making the money.
That's all it is, and that's the whole point. It's
indentured servitude for the players, pretty much.
Yeah, who's the guy who does the occasional sports commentary on NPR? The very well-known name. Can't think of it right now. Oh. Wrote for Sports Illustrated. Frank DeFord. Frank DeFord.
Oh, Frank DeFord, right, okay.
And he very snidely made reference to, well, no, he was picking apart the whole bowl championship series, which isn't about nothing but money. It is not in any way about finding out who the best team in the country in any given year is. And he said, imagine if the World Cup was run like the BCS. He said, you'd have a bunch of meaningless games between, Senegal and Mongolia that, having been played, would come to no meaning unless someone applied an arbitrary pole position to him at the end of the game. He said, the World Series run like the BCS would be a disaster, and yet no one seems able to come to terms with the fact that the BCS series is a disaster, that it winds up with nothing decided except for the fact that people get obscenely wealthy from it.
Yeah, except for the workers, oh, shock. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it just reflects everything else at this point. It really does. Hey, but listen, you know, I just wanted to point out that spot crude topped $112 today.
Jesus.
And it's just keep an eye on it, because the UC, I mean, UC, guys, I'm stuck out here. The EU is about to sort of agree to the not importing oil from Iran, you know, so the sanctions, which equals the push to war, that's what sanctions are these days.
Well, sanctions are economic warfare.
Well, yeah, but they also, you know, sort of accelerate. I mean, if you look at how they...
Yeah, they ramp it up.
They accelerate it. So you know, now Britain is, you know, Britain trying to get on board again. It's like, wasn't Iraq and Afghanistan enough for you freaks? Now that
if it comes to shooting, will the British people tolerate it?
Well, I have no idea. I'm just looking at that thinking, really? Are you really going down that road again with that smarmy public school asshole Cameron? You know what I mean?
Yep. Ugh.
But I also I don't know if you talked about this, but you know that child that's trapped in Colombia is
well, you sent that to me, and I got so wrapped up in Santorum last night. Well, that's just grossy the way that works out. There was so much time spent on Santorum last night, I didn't get to the story, and I wanted the story to have the time that it was due, because this thing says so much to me, because it was 3 nights ago now, and you and I had a conversation about it. It was 3 nights ago that I spent probably 30 to 45 minutes at the beginning of the program talking about the hysteria over the NDAA.
Mm.
And, you know, the people that the Obama apologists call the emo progs, and the people that the people who criticize Obama, in many instances rightly, refer to as the Obama bots, are at each other's throats over the NDAA being signed. And meanwhile, here's a teenage American citizen detained and deported to effing Colombia,
and who don't speak. I'm still.
Who does not speak a lick of Spanish?
And you know,
not even donde está my mama.
Tell me the last time you confused a 14-year-old with a 22-year-old, too, Bob. That's another thing that really pissed me right off. I don't care if she gave 20 fake names. She's 14, and you're going to say because you got the name matches a 22-year-old. Alien, you're gonna say yes, that's her. Bye. Come, I mean,
no, that's the essence of Kafka-esque.
It is. It's Kafka, and also it's just another example of, oh, it's some other dark person. We don't give a f. I'm sorry.
Well, and see that
we're back to that. It's
how do you right? How do you confuse a 15-year-old little girl with a 22-year-old woman? Well, you know, they all look alike to me.
And how do you confuse an African American teenager with some Colombian?
See, I can't. But then again, that goes back to what you and I were talking about, the raid on the Hormel plant where they separated the dark-skinned Hispanics from the light-skinned Hispanics and declared that the dark-skinned Hispanics were clearly illegals.
Oh, well, see, I didn't know it was like that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, God.
And they're standing there holding their union cards out.
Man, well, no, but this girl is still, now the Colombian government won't let the child go. And for the life of me, I'm like, what's that about? And where is this woman, the grandmother? I was just shaking my head almost in tears, that poor woman. I'm thinking, where's her congressperson? You see what I'm saying? A part of me is like, if I could get that woman's email and, you know, give her some advice about what she needs to do, and I don't know why that news that was reporting on her isn't giving this woman the right information. I mean, I hope at this point she has an advocate of some type. I don't, you know, that pissed me right off.
Yeah, the story comes out of Dallas.
Oh.
A 15-year-old girl who has been in the care of her grandmother.
She was 14 at the
time. Was 14 at the time. Runs away from home. Granny starts looking for her. The girl winds up getting arrested in Houston, and just apparently what, plucks a name out of nowhere.
Well, yeah, she's 14. She got stopped for shoplifting. You know, I'm sorry, it's not anything too crazy. The girl ran away because she was upset because her grandfather died and her parents are divorcing. We're not talking about anything out of the ordinary in angst American teenage life.
No.
It's dangerous because it's like, oh, my God, my kids run away. But we're not in something too strange, Bob. You know what I'm saying?
No.
And if someone is stopped in shoplifting, I'm like, why don't you do something else besides call ICE? I'm still stuck on what they do.
Well, and, you know, the ICE public publicity flack, his name's Brian Hale. The answer that he gave was wholly insufficient.
No, the whole thing is insufficient from the get. It's like, If you're arrested for shoplifting.
Right. How do you get from a shoplifting bust by the Houston PD?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
To the Immigration and Customs Enforcement people.
And how about the whole thing is just, it just shows so much incompetence, and it's totally frightening because.
Well, Sandra, I think it's beyond incompetence. It is open disdain.
Yeah. Well, also, I didn't realize that, the international regime was such that you can just shuttle, and I'm being facetious here, just shuttle people across country borders now when you need maids and shit. You see where I'm going with this?
Yeah.
I mean, it's, we're talking about human trafficking now. That's the only thing I can think is going on.
Right, because how did the girl become a pregnant teenager in Colombia?
And she's just working. The Colombian people apparently gave her a work paper, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, let me call somebody up in a mansion on a hill, and you can have her to work. Hello? What? I just want to know what the deal is with this and why this child is not reunited with her grandmother, like now. What's the holdup? Where's the U.S. Embassy?
Well, and is it okay to say that if this was a white child, it would be an entirely different story?
Well, if it was a white child,
if it was a white child, Fox would be running the story 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and Nancy Grace would have already exploded.
No, and Dallas police would have found some other way of identifying the girl. She wouldn't have been, you know what I'm saying? It's like, but it's such a bizarre story anyway.
Yeah, she's been gone since the fall of 2010. She was 14 then.
No, and of course her poor grandmother probably thought, as most people would, that, oh my God, something, the girl was, something bad happened to her, which of course it did. But the last thing I would think as a guardian is that, oh my God, my kid has been shipped via the immigration to a foreign country. I mean, you know what I mean? It's way, way out there if you're a citizen.
And I can't. And again, let's drive this point home, Sandra. At the point where Houston PD turns her over to ICE, it is illegal detention of an American citizen without trial and without recourse to any process, habeas corpus, what have you, at all, and it happened in 2010, and it did not require the National Defense Authorization Act. Probably there was some element of the Patriot Act involved.
Well,
if you get down to actually analyzing the enabling legislation that made that call from Houston PD to ICE possible.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's just it's just stunning, and you shudder at the total lack of rights and protection that this child had. It's just mind numbing. It's just, I don't even know, but what I'm concerned about now, though, is the apparent lack of action right now. What's happening? Why isn't this...
Right, and that's why I said the response of the ICE publicity guy was so sickening. ICE takes these allegations very seriously. At the direction of the Department of Homeland Security, ICE is fully and immediately investigating this matter in order to expeditiously determine the facts of this case. Screw the facts of this case! Get the little American citizen home!
No. I mean, it's too much. I mean, I'm just sort of, why isn't this kid, the sort of embassy in Colombia, which we have this mega close relationship. It's not like she's invented.
Right, because Colombia is full-on fascist.
And Colombia is one of our closest partners, so don't tell me that the embassy down there can't say boo and them MFers got that kid on a plane now. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I don't understand. Why in the world would Colombia not turn this child over?
Well, and CBS is now, they say that she is now sitting in a detention facility waiting to come home.
Well, no.
But where's the arrangements made to come home part of that story? Because I read the whole thing and I didn't find it.
Not only that, but I understand that you know, this is a secondary. But the girl was 14, and she was not pregnant when she left. Now she's 15, and I read that she's, or they stated that she's pregnant. And she was complaining that she has to work too hard. I mean, it's just too weird. It's such a strange story. And you have to think that, okay, there's one here, got a little play. How many other hundreds or thousands of people are in this sort of nightmare right now, Bob?
Right, because the final paragraph of this odious story says, ICE officials also noted there have been instances where ICE has seen cases of individuals providing inaccurate information regarding who they are and their immigration status for ulterior motives.
Yeah. And the fingerprinting also, it's like, hello, this is 2011. The kid is 14. I mean, I just...
Well, no. Yeah, stop right there for a minute.
You know?
Because the kid was 14, all right? Now, granted, Texas is a strange place. It's just a strange... The laws are... I mean, you know, they allow you to shoot... They allow you to use deadly force in defense of property, really.
Yeah.
So we know some of that we're not dealing with normal and rational necessarily, but in the course of the cup of coffee I had for 3 years in law school, I did manage to learn that juvenile offender status is really, really special, because at least for instance here in this state, if let's say you're 13 and you get caught shoplifting, it does not matter if you tell them that your name is Epaminondas Archimedes. You're 14. And that means, and you err on the side of caution, Sandra. You don't charge as an adult and then back up to juvenile. If you have the least suspicion that the child is a juvenile status, then there's all kinds of things that come into play around that child. And ICE or no ICE, how the hell do you get to call ICE on a juvenile?
No, I know. I mean, I was thinking, you know, which, you know, I have to admit, when I was 12, I got busted shoplifting. And guess what? I was taken upstairs, and, you know, within 40 minutes, my worst nightmare happened.
Yeah, Mama showed up.
My mother was there. Understand what I'm saying? That was hell on earth. But there was no pigs or police. It was like, you know, you can't do this. And, you know, my life was made hell appropriately. So, and, you know, I really wasn't shoplifting anymore after that.
Took all the fun right out of it, didn't it?
Yeah. But my point is that 13, 12, 14, 15, what happened to the usual way of dealing with juveniles?
Precisely my point. I mean, you cannot.
Parent, you don't. You would turn them over to the state social services, ICE. I don't understand. You know.
And that's the question. So are we to understand that at least in Texas, because this thing just, God, it crawled all over me from the moment I read it, Sandra. In Texas, in the United States of America, in 2010. There is in place a mechanism, legal, by which to identify potential undocumented immigrants that is more effective and more quickly moving than any system they have to identify missing children. You know, the kids on the milk cartons.
Right? No, I mean I mean, yeah, there's just so much to take in with this one particular story. I mean, it's horrifying, and it's just you know, I am just in awe of how this child survived. You know, because when you don't have language skills, take my word for it, it is hell.
And apparently, it ain't no help to speak English.
Well, I'm just saying, it's just like, I don't even know, I just don't...
But you asked, you know, how many other people has this happened to? Tim from L.A. just sent me a link with the following. In 2009, the Associated Press conducted a month-long review of federal records and found more than 50 U.S. citizens who have been illegally detained and in some case deported. U.S. citizens. In one case, an Army veteran from Washington State who was naturalized in 1998 was awarded $400,000 because ICE had wrongly held him for 7 months while agents tried to deport him. He received a letter of apology from the government in addition to financial compensation. So I guess we can say that if we can just get this child home, she's got her college paid for.
Well, you know, I mean, and it just was...
You know, that's one of those people that George W. Bush referred to as having won life's lottery.
Yeah, no, but it's just, well, listen, I really want to some sort of find some follow-up on this because, you know, just listening to her grandmother, it was just heartbreaking. I just thought, oh, my God, you know.
And, I mean, is there, because Texas has lots of immigration lawyers. Surely to God, some immigration lawyer has heard about this story and gone to that, because generally they work for nonprofit organizations and NGOs and so forth, and they can go and knock on the door and say, here, let me help.
Oh, I know, and it's just like, I mean, I'm waiting for the fire dog late post up. I'm sorry, I don't mean to. You know, where does that help?
Yeah, the little girl in Columbia Advocacy Fund, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm just saying, it's like, there's a whole bunch of talk, a lot of talk, but I'm like, well, here's a little case for you folks.
But,
you know?
but again, this child was missing, and she's a teenager, and her grandmama wants her back real bad and loves her with all her, you know, she left her home because of profound manifest grief for
right,
which...
Her family, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it looks like, and I know it's whatever to say this, but it seemed like, that's what I mean about it being a normal American family. We're not talking about nothing too far out there. And obviously she comes from a home that's under stress, but I got no impression that it was anything other than...
No, but it's true. It's true. If she had been paler...
Yeah, well, I don't
there would have been wall-to-wall... I mean, because we know, we're not just saying this because out of some sort of race paranoia. There are demonstrable, gatherable, reviewable facts, you know, empirical data that show that if there is a pretty white girl gone, that the entire media structure of the United States will turn itself on its head.
Well, no, but see, I'm trying to understand why this story isn't on cable yet. I mean, it seems to be a just...
But I got this story from you 2 days ago, and it just popped on Think Progress today.
Okay, why? Because I ain't seen shit, except for that Dallas, local news reporting. That's all I've seen, and that little story that went with it. Now, I don't. Is it on... I think it also might be on Slate.
Now, but I'd like to know, I mean, because, yeah, I'm looking at the same story you sent me. Have there been any candlelight vigils in front of the courthouse in Dallas?
And
anybody holding up placards with their picture on it demanding justice?
No, and, you know, it's like, where's the calls to the U.S. State Department? I mean, it's on every level. Local, state, federal... the UN, any goddamn, everybody can be involved in this story is outrageous.
Well, I'm sure I would get called some name by one side or the other, but did this child not get disappeared, Sandra? Because this...
Well, yeah, I mean, it definitely is...
I mean, we do secret renditions to Columbia, I do believe.
I mean, all of it, it's just, there is something, it's just totally odd. It's one of the strangest stories yet. And I'm really disturbed that it's not getting the play that it deserves, you know?
Well, at least it's getting some, because I just got a note from Tim in L.A. who is absolutely incensed by this. He said he's putting the information out to Occupy L.A. right now as we speak.
Yeah.
And, you know, Occupy talks to Occupy talks to Occupy.
No. I mean, I just, you know, because I just think that it's just an outrage. And I saw the email address of the reporter for this story, you know, and yeah, I think I might do some sort of email to that person to get some follow-up, or is there some way that you're putting the grandmother in contact with the right sources? I mean, you know, what's going on?
Or how about just contact information so that public outrage can be directed to its proper target, to wit, immigrations and customs enforcement?
I mean, you do remember
that this is the same ICE that threw the Halloween party. Remember the Halloween party ICE photos from the Bush administration?
No.
Where they came dressed up as well, it was racist. You know, there was a white guy dressed up as some dark skinned Rasta.
Oh, Rocky, yeah, vaguely. Well, there's also black leadership in Texas. You know, where they at? You know, what's happening?
Yeah, where's anybody?
Where's the advocates for this woman, Jesse, Al, any of these folks? It's like, I don't know, you know, it's too much. It's way too much for me to wrap my head around.
And then there's this coming from Isaac, Sandra. And I got a feeling here. Where is Obama on this? Hell, Henry Louis Gates gets locked out of his house and Obama has a beer summit for the jackass.
Shut up. Well, you know what? Wow. Yeah, I don't even know what to say about that. But I give up on where he at. He ain't never where he should be, so I stop. But, you know, Cornel West might be interested in this.
Yeah. Everybody, it's 2012, Sandra. If it doesn't have something to do with the presidential clown car circus, they're not interested.
I know. It's...
I mean, I'm proud of Reverend Al for referring to Romney as Willard. I'm proud of that. I feel like maybe somehow tangentially the Horn family might be responsible for that.
No, and it's you're right about that, because all of a sudden they're able to find all the money in the world for journalism when it's this horse race clown show. That is so true.
Did you follow the coverage of the Iowa caucus? And I watched MSNBC. Did you see Ed?
Well, listen, somebody else is going on about him. No, listen, I don't know. I didn't see it. Was it really as bad as was it horrible? What was his problem?
Oh, he was over-screaming Lawrence O'Donnell. Like it was some tawdry talk radio show or something. And he was screaming because he was advocating that Rick Santorum really does have a manufacturing plan. It was loony. It was...
No, I didn't know. I mean, wow.
And Isaac writing in, I corrected what I thought were typos. No, he refers to Obama as Obami. Obami. O-B-A-M-Y.
Oh, right, yeah. Obami or like the Bambi?
Yeah, then there's Obambi, yeah. As I noted the other night, Bush the Darker.
Oh, no, see, that was so wrong. Oh, no. Where did that one come from? Because that one's a nightmare, but it's funny.
Apparently, the story has also shown up in the New York Daily News.
Isn't that the paper that Juan Gonzalez writes for from Democracy Now? Anyway...
Maybe, but Jude provided an email address for N. Dillon, D-I-L-L-O-N, at NewYorkDailyNews.com, who is apparently writing on the story.
New York Daily.
Yeah. Jude refers to 14-year-old Laureen Turner. Maybe there's another one of these stories out there. This is 15-year-old Jacadrian... Oh, Laureen Turner is the grandmother.
I got it. Right.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
And that's in the New York Daily News?
Yeah.
What's the writer's name again? Sorry.
The email is N, it's initial N, last name Dillon.
Okay.
So, Jude says she is writing her own email as we speak.
Okay, yeah, no, I definitely will. I mean, because it's, I just don't really understand, because how many days, I mean, I don't even know how long the story's been out there, but, because I forgot to check the date, but.
Well, it's slugged January 3rd with update today 4/14, which would be yesterday.
Yeah.
So I guess there haven't been any updates, or maybe it was updated today, but I don't see anything much more than when I originally read the story.
Well, I would like to think that, you know, that there would have to be some movement on it, just by virtue of the grandmother establishing the girl's citizenship, you know, and nationality and all that kind of stuff.
And you know, there's a question. Okay, girl mistakenly deported, maybe coming home soon.
None of that is registering with me.
But I don't, yeah, who knows what that means. Interestingly, there's a photo here of her ID. It's a missing child report online. And it's crazy making, Sandra. And I don't know, the story will be about getting the young woman home, as it should be, but I wonder if anyone will get the larger context of this, that we are in fact talking about indefinitely detaining and disappearing an American citizen without due process of law and without much of anything.
Well, I mean, because I'm not, it's not a real concern of mine, the whole immigration process. But are you telling me that if you're done for some sort of infraction or crime, it's don't stop, pass, just go. There's no, you're not prosecuted for that crime.
Right, because
I
don't know if it's a function of how much reporting was done by the folks at the Dallas TV station. I haven't read the New York Daily News story. But there is no indication in anything that I have seen or that you have seen that suggests there was anything resembling due process of law involved anywhere along the way.
Yeah, because I'm
that is truly, and I mean this in every honest sense of the word, that's chilling.
Yeah, no, that is definitely, should be the first place you pause. It's like, wow. You know, but I'm also mystified by 22 is such a long way from 14. I don't even know what to do with that one. That's just way out there to me.
Well, 22, no Spanish accent.
Yeah.
No knowledge of Spanish. They're very crafty, these illegals.
No, and it's just some teenager that speaks American lying to your ass about whatever they do. That's called.
Yeah, well, you know what? Yeah, bring, and is there any guarantee that once she, what's going to happen to her once she's brought home? Is she going to face charges on shoplifting?
You shudder to think.
She's going to be brought home? Extradited?
I would think not. I mean, I'm still stuck on, you know, what the hell has that child been doing in Colombia for the last, we don't even know how long she's been down there.
Okay, here's the update coming from Isaac, Sandra. Colombia will hand over to U.S. officials Friday, tomorrow, a Dallas teenager who ran away from home more than a year ago and was mistakenly deported, the South American country's foreign ministry said in a statement Thursday night. So it's breaking news.
Mm.
The statement did not say when or how the teen would return to the United States.
Right, but she's being turned over to, you know, the scary Americans that turned her over to the Colombians in the first place. That poor kid. I don't even know. I feel for that child.
How Jacadrian got to Colombia is a mystery to the family. The Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency maintains she was arrested in Houston for theft and told them she was an adult from Colombia.
Well, so what? People tell people things all the time. I'm still stuck. It's like, yeah, since you take their word for it. Come on.
But it only gets worse according to these details, Sandra. The agency says authorities believed her story because she maintained her false identity throughout the process. What? In English? She maintained her false Colombian identity in English without a trace of a Hispanic accent?
It's not funny, but it's just like, it's Kafka. I know it's all overused, but wow.
But it gets worse. So she maintains her false identity throughout the process with all those caveats. So ICE hands her over to an immigration judge who ordered her removed from the country.
Okay, so we'll go from theft, the shoplifting, to some sort of pig, to some other official, all the way to a goddamn judge?
Yes, ma'am.
Oh, wow. Listen.
At no time during these criminal proceedings was her identity determined to be false.
All right, and we're supposed to, and that's supposed to make us nod our head and say, oh, yeah, I guess I can understand the mistake. What?
Well, but the lawyer for the family says that ICE also took her fingerprints.
Yeah, well, don't they? Or they usually take that and blood and everything else, don't they?
Right.
I'm not buying it.
Failed to match them. In other words, they took her fingerprints, and she had very convincingly maintained her false identity.
Yeah.
And so they took the name of the false identity and the fingerprints, and they didn't match, and they said, shipper, anyway. The name matched a woman wanted by Interpol.
Wait. What? Interpol?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, shit.
Well, wait a minute. Just wait a daggum minute. Now, what was it, Tuesday? Monday, we had the story about the guy who lost his case in the United States Second Circuit Court of Appeals because he wanted to be a cop, but they wouldn't give him an interview because he scored too high on the cop test. He was too smart to be a cop. And it turns out that the national average, and see, what he scored, you may not have been listening at this time, what he scored on the test, he scored a 33, which is the IQ equivalent of 125, which is normal, high average. They wouldn't interview anybody with a score higher than 27, but the national average for people taking the cop test and becoming cops is between 20 and 22, which may take you down somewhere around, and I'm not using this as a pejorative, but as a DSM.
You lying.
No, ma'am. No, I am not speaking in tongues because it ain't Wednesday.
Wait a minute. Okay, so I'm sorry. Okay, what is the national average?
20 to 22.
And that's like about what, a 95 IQ?
Yeah, 90. Trouble with shoelaces IQ? Velcro on the shoes IQ?
No. I didn't know there was a ceiling to those sort of tests. Are you kidding me?
The highest you can score on the cop test is 40.
Because I know with the CIA, they look at you fishy if you have some critical skills.
Yeah.
Okay.
But no, so let's understand that is the system manned by the people that took a 14-year-old girl and shipped her to Colombia.
Well, no, I think that must have been flirting with some room temperature IQ there, because that's just, well, stupid. But I understand the connection. So the cops, that is so disturbing. I had no idea that...
I mean, but there's, God, this is slice of American horror life, because there's more details in this story from CNN. So, the Dallas police were not so helpful. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, not so much. Dallas Transportation Authorities, nada. So, Grandma starts following Jacadrian's best friend on Facebook, and that's how she eventually tracks Jacadrian to Houston, where the 14-year-old girl was working in what the story refers to, a club under the name of Tika Cortez. Janisa Turner said she saw Jacadrian's face on the marquee on her birthday.
Oh, wow, this is just wow. You know what? Wow, the grandmother, you know.
And so the next thing, so she's got a handle on it, Sandra. And she's following on the Facebook page, and she knows it's her because Tika Cortez has posted a photograph of herself with her grandmother. And she's in Houston. And so the grandmother's like getting ready to, and the next thing she knows, she logs onto the Facebook page and it says she's in Columbia. Kafka would blush at this. Kafka wouldn't. A guy waking up in bed turned into a bug is more realistic than this.
No, props to grandmother for utilizing that social media. You know what I'm saying? Good Jesus.
And Janisa Turner said she believes her daughter was coerced along the way with someone promising her something that led her to maintain a fake story about who she is.
That I believe. Exactly. And you know what? I'm really happy to hear that the child is still on Earth, alive, you know? Wow.
Pictures of Jacadrian in Colombia showed her sitting on men's laps smoking marijuana.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Mm.
So, prostitution, slavery, because I'm guessing that this is not the parthenogenesis pregnancy.
Well, it's an adventure, but I don't know what type it would be. I'm speechless. That is crazy.
It's baffling. There are so many layers and so many elements to this. You hope she gets home okay.
Yeah, no, I really would like some sort of follow-up saying that she's back in, I don't know what town in Texas, but...
Dallas.
Props to Grandma and props to that teenager for surviving. However, she did. Good night.
And what the hell is wrong with a country where... These are federal civil servants.
No, I know. Well, no, all of it. All of the whole process where the authorities were involved just sort of failed.
And from January 2009 to whenever this happened in 2010, how hard is it to clean out an institutional culture of corruption, which is what ICE became entirely between 2001 and 2009?
Yeah, and now Obama's just using ICE as a means to deport as many people as he can, from the looks of it, without any sort of processes.
Badges? We don't need no stinking badges. Jesus.
Well, anyway, I didn't really mean to stay on this long.
No, that's okay. I'm glad. I wanted to make sure that the story got the time that it deserved, and I'm glad you and I were able to discuss it because. I first saw it because of you, and I know it was burning you up as much as it was me.
Oh, just sort of out there. Well, anyway, yeah, thanks for the update, and, I think I will look into the daily. Yeah, I wrote that down.
Yeah, New York Daily News.
Right.
And, yeah, that is the paper Juan Gonzalez writes for.
Maybe it'll migrate over to Democracy Now!, that story.
Well, that would be nice.
I hope it gets resolved. You know, I hope it's true.
Me too.
Anyway,
and I hope she gets rich on the settlement.
Good night. Anyway, okay. Have a good
take
evening.
Care, Sandra. Bye now. And onward. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello. Jack, writing from Shreveport. Anyone taken into custody gets asked many questions such as, what town in Colombia do you live in? Where is that in the country? What's your address? Who do you live with? Etc. Well, you get the idea. There is no way that girl could have answered any routine questions such as those. I'd like to know more personally about the woman wanted by Interpol who was such a close match. Well, you know, when you're wanted by Interpol, that's crafty. And sometimes they'll masquerade as 14-year-old girls. Shorty in L.A. writing, the email says, read immediately. Another American deported, read ASAP. And as soon as this computer decides to let me, I will. Oh, that, yeah. Going back to June 19th, 2009. Earlier this month, U.S. citizen Irving Palomo was detained and put in a van headed for Mexico due to an ICE mix-up. A few months ago, Mark Little, a U.S. citizen who suffers from mild retardation, was deported to Mexico. Mexican officials then deported him to Honduras, and Honduras deported him to Guatemala. After spending 4 months in Latin American prisons and homeless shelters, Atlanta airport officials tried to deport Little again on his way back home to North Carolina. This is something real. This is something that... it's institutional, it's bureaucratic, but don't think for an instant that this isn't a direct result of all the freaks, all the right-wingers who jump up and down talking about illegal immigrants. How many years ago was it? I remember the case coming out of Tennessee of the woman who spoke a Mayan dialect, who had her child removed from her custody over language issues. And it all comes from the hatred and hysteria that is generated by a machine that is funded, well-funded, by the right wing. But of course, these are people with mild mental retardation, perhaps a darker skin tone. As long as it doesn't happen to the white folks, right? Sure. Damn. Like I said, I didn't want that story to just be a mention somewhere along the way, because it's a frightening reminder of the world we live in. And it is especially a reminder in the context of the hysteria over the DFAA that there's nothing new there. At most, it is a codification of things already being done. And I doubt there is anyone who would occupy, wrong word probably, the White House. There's no one who would be President of the United States that upon becoming President of the United States would not want that kind of power. Because once one has power, there's never enough of it. Jesus, Thomas Jefferson railed for 4 years about the abuses of power of the Federalists and John Adams, and no sooner got his started warming the seat there in the White House, which did not at that time have an Oval Office, than suddenly, you know what I'd like to do? I'd like to buy two-thirds of a continent. I'll take Manifest Destiny for 3 cents an acre, Alex. Mr. Jefferson, do you have that constitutional power? I don't need no constitution. I want Louisiana. That's how it works. You get power, you want to keep power, and you want to add to power. Let's see, there's Diane Williams, who was deported to Honduras by the U.S. government, who was born in Louisiana. But she doesn't look right, because she's of Caucasian and Native American descent, and the Native American descent appearance is pretty well manifest in her face. So ship them on. No matter how hard you deny it, they deny it. It goes on and on and on. But at least we didn't spend the entire program on Rick Santorum or Tim Tebow. Where to go to wrap up the show? About 8 minutes remaining. Three or four, really. Not really time to do any real justice to any major story. Ron Paul? Who cares? Well, I mean, he did say in a book that he wrote in 1987. Now, and this is a book. It's like the book on abortion. Is he going to say somebody ghostwrote those too? Because that would just be plagiarism. An AIDS patient is a victim of his own lifestyle. That's what he said in 1987. The individual suffering from AIDS certainly is a victim, frequently a victim of his own lifestyle. But this same individual victimizes innocent citizens by forcing them to pay for his care. And we thought it was something new a few months ago when he suggested that sick people be left to die in churches. But it's what Republicans are. We're not taking them out of context. We're taking them in context. Specific, nailed down context. They just don't like it when we do. There's a big difference. Oh, well. Where's my copy of Ruby Don't Take That Gun to Town When I Need It? State legislator from California. Want to guess the party? You get three. Two don't count. Big gun rights freak. Busted last week trying to bring a loaded handgun onto an airplane. That would be Tim Donnelly, arrested after a Colt 45 with four rounds was discovered inside his carry-on bag as he went through a screening machine at Ontario International Airport. That's not Ontario, Canada. Ontario, California. Another magazine with five rounds was in Donnelly's carry-on bag at the airport. He is, of course, a teabagger. He says he inadvertently left the gun in his briefcase. And why? Well, he's had death threats, he says. Ever since he began spearheading a petition drive for a referendum to overturn a recent state law in California that allows illegal immigrant college students to apply for public financial aid. Later, he said that it was in his briefcase because he was hiding the gun from his wife. But there it is again. White hysteria over the changing face of America. Their inability to come to terms with the essence of reality itself. Tim asking me to spread this message to the Occupy community at large. We need to pressure ICE, the feds, the police, the judges. If the corporate media will not do it, we will. That address is info@occupytogether.org. Spread the story around. info@occupytogether.org. I'll be looking for you on the front porch tomorrow, Friday. Have a great evening till then. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this happen. Our volunteers, you who contribute your ideas, your time, your energy, and the wherewithal to keep the bills paid. Thank you. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas Gene and Susan, our blogger Texas Betsy. Thanks to Reverbo. Thanks to my head writer, David, in Tennessee. Thanks to John Fox and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org, whence come all of the various manifestations of the stream of the horn. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Go there, sign up for the newsletter, contribute if you can. Maybe even buy yourself one of the coolest t-shirts you'll ever own, a Save the Endangered Hillbilly t-shirt, crmw.net. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.